By the mid to late 1950s, the traffic service section needed up-to-date information on traffic volumes and vehicle classifications. How were these figures obtained? John McCarroll.
Two ways. There were little mechanical counters on the roadside, and of course the old-fashioned way where you stood on the side of the road with a pad of paper and a pencil and you ticked cars. You could do that when there were not too many of them around. Or you could get manual counters you put in your hand and click them, like counting sheep through a gate. But more and more we did mechanical counting. These were done with mechanisms with electric switch and a pressure-sensitive valve and a tube across the road.
Barry Pennell joined the DMR in 1948. His job was to plan for future increases in traffic volumes.
You would rely on the data that came in from fixed traffic counters, which were recorded, and you could work out what the average annual increase of traffic would be. So you would just multiply that by 20 years and you'd come up with a future traffic volume.
Ken McCallum was given the task of gathering traffic origin and destination information every Monday morning.
We did number plate surveys as well, where you had to write down the number plates, and we did one on the Harbour Bridge, getting number plates that came through the toll booths. And I can remember being involved in the Hume Corridor study. We had to stop vehicles at random on the Hume Highway 24 hours with police with us. And we had to ask them those sensitive questions such as, how much do you earn? What type of work do you do? Where have you come from and where are you going? It was supposed to be anonymous, but it was amazing how few people wanted to answer those questions, and particularly the ones at night.
John McCarroll adds.
We did placement studies where you were basically trying to work out where drivers drove on the roads. Did they drive close to the curb, or in the middle, or all over the place? Because at that stage, lane lines weren't in use. Centre lines were fairly scarce also. So one of the things that we were trying to do was decide on whether we should spend money painting lines on roads, and if so, where. I was going out there and measuring where people drove, and then painting lines on roads and seeing if it made any difference the way they drove. And yeah, by and large, it did.
Terry Winning was posted to the DMR's Milsons Point office, where he became involved in the introduction of the first lane merging experiments.
The concept of merging lane was introduced in the early 60s. The very first one, to my memory, was on the Bradfield Highway approach to the Sydney Harbour Bridge. Line marking of the pavement was a new thing. Now, this continuity line, what's known as a continuity line, was introduced to assist merging of traffic. That very first one in the early 60s was quite confusing. Motorists didn't know what to make of it, whether to keep left of it or right of it, and what does it mean? You know, previously, without it being line marked, the merge took place naturally, and having to delineate it did create a bit of confusion.
Harry Kamkin started off as an engineering assistant and rose to become head of the traffic engineering branch of the Department of Motor Transport, and later, director of the Traffic Authority.
We still only had one centre line on the Harbour Bridge. I don't think there were lane lines then. Road markings were paint. The paint was domestic paint, and it wasn't special road marking paint at that time. In fact, we entered into a contract with the School of Highway and Traffic Engineering to do some research on developing more skid-proof road marking materials.
To observe the appearance of pavement markings on the road, to give a driver's eye appreciation of what the pavement marking would look like, they bought a piece of apparatus from a tank. And it was like the viewing mechanism out of a tank, which you'd look into the top of it, and through reflecting mirrors you could see along the roadway. And we used to set this up on the desk. We'd draw, say, for instance, a right turn arrow, and then you'd look at it through this piece of tank apparatus to see what it looked like. And if you notice right turn arrows, the ones that are correctly designed and painted, they're not a uniform width. The idea being that you widen the arrow so that when you look at it longitudinally, it does appear as a constant width. But in actual fact, if you look in plan, it's a widened section of the arrow. It's quite a distorted shape.